Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight's episode of Ready to Unload with Cal and Sanpete is sponsored by Blue Haven NYC in Greenwich Village, New York City's sports bar for grown-ups. Go to www.bluehavennyc.com for details.
Hello there, and welcome to Ready to Unload with Cal and Sanpete, episode 3.33, coming to you live from Bayside, New York, Commack, New York, and Freehold, New Jersey. It is Thursday night, 9:30 p.m. It is time for the Ready to Unload with Cal and Sanpete podcast slash radio show slash lots of stuff. Tebow, it's utility. We're a utility show at this point. We're going to be joined a little later in the show by an old friend of mine, old friend of ours, although Cal's never met him, but that's cool. They're going to meet tonight on the show, tonight. Tonight. Tonight is your night, bro. You're going to do it. You're going to... Oh, I love that from Twins. That's the best part of Twins. Mark Finney, a buddy of ours named Finn, huge Red Sox fan. I thought of having him on the show because he's a huge Red Sox fan, and we were going to talk about the Red Sox and their reboot. And how it relates to the Mets, of course. And I figured, well, I'll have Finn on. And then I remembered he shot and edited and wrote and directed his first full-length feature, a little indie movie up in Boston there where he's from. And that's coming out. He's in the process of editing it. So we're going to talk to him about his movie called Fat. I have no way of relating to that whatsoever about a guy who is addicted to food. And I know PJ has nothing on this. So Finney's going to join us in a little bit, and it's going to be great to talk to him. But before we get there, let's bring in the co-host, who's sitting here patiently. You know, we're on FaceTime tonight. Usually we're on Uvu. Uvu, not for nothing, not the most reliable gig in the world.
Kel.
Uvu. But tonight we're on FaceTime. Crystal clear HD we're looking at each other at, and it's not – we both have faces for radio. This is not great. I don't want to see that Cal hasn't shaved clearly in at least 2 days. And me, please, I'm a spectacle. I'm in my house coat, nice. Let's bring him in, the co-host of the show, the Cal to my Sanpete, the Ying to my Yang, the monkey in the wrench, the fly in the ointment, Mr. Calneva Calpino Caliente, El O'Brien.
Hey, Steve.
You are so nice.
Yeah, that FaceTime thing is, oof.
A couple of people approached me about doing, if we should do like a streaming video, like a YouTube, there's a YouTube channel, there's Spreecast.
Not tonight.
I don't know.
Tonight would not be one of those nights. This is not to insult you, but I see myself looking back at me and not that good.
You know, there's an anonymity that doing an old-fashioned podcast still provides you. You know, Cal, I'm reading this great book. Well, I think it's great. Well, let me backtrack. We're going to bring in the bishop in a second here, but let me backtrack. Do you still read for leisure?
I do.
Okay, what do you read?
Well, I like to read biographies. I'm more of a nonfiction reader.
Okay, and you commute via car.
That's right.
Not like me, I commute via mass transit. So I have a lot of reading time.
Yeah, I cannot read while I commute.
I would
frowned upon in the state of New York.
It is.
I don't like
but
that.
You still read for leisure.
I do.
Okay. I had stopped entirely over the last – I've been reading the same book for like 8 months, literally. And I will just pick it up when I'm going to bed at night and fall asleep within 8 minutes. That's why this 275-page book has taken me quite some time to get through. Not to mention it was a Christopher Hitchens book and it was very deep and I had to go through it with a highlighter and stuff. So it wasn't like, you know, your light reading nice.
I feel like you actually did go through it with a highlighter, too.
I definitely did.
Like, you're not exaggerating.
No. That's the kind of heavy-duty material. PJ can speak to this. It will bring the Bishop in, the Bishop Pop Culture PJ. A big reader, Cal. Very big reader.
Yes, I've heard that. He's
a literature guy.
Mm-hmm.
He goes and reads, you know, A Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy for fun, like once a year. Just whacks out the 9 books that is. So he's a voracious. That's the only time you can use voracious, isn't it?
A reader. Maybe yeah. You could also have a voracious appetite, I believe.
We'll talk to Finney when he plays his own intro music. I love it.
That means he's ready to come in.
he's
just like, all right, I'm coming in.
Yeah.
Make way.
This is like when PJ comes in from the bullpen. Like, he will not come in to close out a podcast without his intro music now.
Hi, fellas.
And now you know we're going to the pen when you hear that music. We're going to the pen. Hey, Peach, I'm just talking about how I can't read for leisure anymore.
I had accidentally trained myself to fall asleep while reading, and it takes a long time to break that habit.
Yeah. No, you know what happened for me, guys, is I listen to podcasts so often now. I got into WTF like when it first came out and Bill Simmons and the BS Report and – or maybe a fantasy, or NPR, Fresh Air, whatever. And I listen to that on my commute home, because on the commute there, I read the papers, read the sports sections for the two locals, and listen to Pandora. On the way home, podcasts, I find I cannot read a book and listen to a podcast. It's like watching a TV show and trying to listen to a podcast. I can't do it.
That's difficult.
It's too engaging.
Yeah, I can't focus. So, leisure reading, out the window. So, long story short, too late. The other day, I was in a bookstore. I found myself on lunch and had some time to kill by a Barnes & Noble. I'm like, you know what? I'm buying a book.
An actual
can't
book?
Can't stop me.
That's right. I knocked over 3 sales associates and 2 middle-aged women who had just left the gym.
Walking like Popeye trying to get the olive oil for some reason.
That's correct. And I bought a book, and you know what I got was Chuck Klosterman's The Visible Man. I had read most of Chuck Klosterman's stuff, but I hadn't read – this is a fiction book.
Right.
It's a fiction novel. It is fantastic. But the reason I say all this, there is a point here, and I think it's a pretty good one. The idea is that this guy in this book has invented a suit – spoiler alert, by the way, but he has invented a suit that makes him not invisible, but that basically reflects light back into the room. He basically invented a mirror suit, essentially. Not that I'm not describing it right. It's not invisibility. He's in the room. He's physically in the room. But the suit can cloak him.
Cal, is this like someone trying to describe a Far Side cartoon to you?
I'm trying to follow along, and I think I've got it.
Right.
All right. I mean, I'm not alone here.
Right.
No, this is tough.
It basically makes him invisible, but he's physically in the room.
He's in the room, but everybody sees light.
Everybody sees a slightly refracted version of the room.
Okay.
So, like, if he's sitting on a chair in the room with you, you would see just the chair, but it would be slightly out of focus, but you would never notice it.
Okay.
Okay, so he's physically in the room. If you sit on him, he would grunt. You know what I mean? It's not invisible. You can't put your hand through him. That's the main thing we're trying to get through here.
But could you
and
hear
that's
him?
That's when I left the pitch meeting.
No, you can hear him. You can totally hear him. Like, if he sneezes. But the point of the book is, this guy, as a scientific experiment, observes people who are alone. Because the premise is, that's the only time you're truly yourself.
Is when you feel like you're alone.
Is when you are alone.
Oh, not when you feel like you're alone, when you are actually alone.
Because he's observing these people, they don't know he's in the room.
So he feels like he's alone. He's not alone.
The guy, no.
All right.
The observee.
Tom Hanks is a businessman. No. This pitch has got it all wrong.
Bruce Willis is dead.
Okay. Sean Penn will get, who's hot right now? Rachel McAdams? No.
Zac Efron.
This guy, as a scientific experiment, invents this suit where he cannot be seen. Okay? And his goal is to observe people alone.
Observe the other people in the room.
That's right. So
got it.
He follows somebody home. He sneaks into their apartment.
Oh.
Their house or whatever. They leave the door open. They leave the window open.
It's one of those stories.
He doesn't break in. And he sits there for days and just observes what people do when they think they're alone.
Got it.
Because to those people, they are alone. And it's fascinating. It really is. It makes a ton of great points. Like, if you know Allison and the girls are out, right? And you come home to an empty house, and you know you're going to be alone in that house for 3 hours. Okay? How you act is different than if there are people in the room. If the girls and Allison are home, you act slightly differently.
Eh, maybe a bad example. I don't seem to care, one way or the other.
It's not even.
No, I get your point, yes.
You know what I mean? You may grab a tennis ball and throw it against the wall for an hour and not even realize you're doing it because you're home alone. You would never do that with them there. Because you would be doing something. You would be doing something that relates to them, or you would be doing something, you know what I mean?
Right.
That's what this guy who's in therapy, that's the conceit. He's telling all this to a therapist.
That's an interesting concept.
It's really good. But to bring it back full circle, that's what I don't want to do a video stream.
Yeah.
I don't want to think that people are watching us have this conversation.
Well, but people are watching me have this conversation right now, just behind me.
Right, but it's your daughters that are, you know, 9 and 6 or 7 or whatever. They're not going to comment on what you think of Bill Buckner in the play in 86 or... You know, your take on the cover, too. They're not going to have an opinion on that.
Right, yeah. You're right. There's like a security blanket of no feedback, no opinion about what we're saying.
Can I propose that you might be, if we did that, perhaps if we did it with no video monitoring so that you couldn't see yourself, maybe you would be more natural.
But you'd still know that people are watching you. Like, I the only person watching me right now, every week when we do the show, is either Cal or Cal and you, right? So if I get up and walk around or I'm doing whatever I feel like doing, I do. Because we're engaged in a conversation. If I felt like there were a ton of eyes on me, maybe I don't, you know, walk around. Maybe I'm not comfortable. Maybe I don't pick up the baseball like I always do or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
But see, for you, it's a little different because you have a history of performing, so you know how to, you know how to behave in a setting like that with people watching.
It might be worse for me because then I might start performing.
You might. That's true.
Because I'm a hot dog.
You might not be yourself.
That's right. That's what I'm saying.
My hand's in my pants right now.
Of course it is.
I got an itch on down my leg. And I can't reach it, so I put the hand directly into the pants to scratch the leg. I wouldn't care if there was a camera on me or not.
Right, Cal.
Oh, other people might care if there was a camera on you.
But Cal, he went Beltran style there. No research, straight to the down the pants.
He did.
Did you read that?
No.
Oh, you didn't hear about this?
No, what happened?
The guys on Mostly Mets podcast killed this. We're going to get to the big unload in a minute, and then we might just go straight to Finn. But I got to tell you this.
Okay.
And all credit goes to the guys on Mostly Mets podcast, Ted Berg, Toby Hyde, Patrick Flood. Check out Mostly Mets podcast, et cetera, et cetera. PJ, you're going to want to stick around for this because you're going to love this. They talked about this last week on the, on their show. Check it out on iTunes and stuff and also on SNY.TV. So they're reading about Carlos Beltran. There's this article in the St. Louis Dispatch about Carlos Beltran. And you know how Ted Berg is with Beltran, right, Cal? Like,
yes.
To blame it on Beltran goof. And
sarcasm.
Like right. So he's telling, right, he's telling Patrick Flood all this stuff about Beltran that Flood didn't know. And apparently, Carlos Beltran is a weird cat.
Yeah, that I know.
Right, okay. So in this article, his wife talks about his love of animals, right? Like he has a love of animals. And I can't even say this with a straight face. So apparently when he was a rookie or like his second year in Kansas City, he had a dream about a monkey picking like gnats out of his hair, like taking care of him.
Like the like, monkey was taking care of Carlos Beltran.
That's right. Yes.
Okay.
So what does he do? He wakes up from that dream. He finds out where he can buy a monkey and he goes and gets one.
Like the next day.
That's right. And the quote is, no research, nothing, straight to the monkey. This is what he said.
That's what Beltran said.
That's what Beltran said. That's
straight
the
to the
quote.
Monkey.
No research, nothing, straight to the monkey.
All right.
I mean,
wow.
It's just magnificent.
That's great.
And then he had this monkey for like 5 years.
Well, I should hope so.
Right, and then apparently Berg tells the story that it was it got too big for diapers. It was taking its. He's got the monkey in diapers. He's got Marcel from Friends around the clubhouse.
Have we never heard of this story?
No research, nothing, Cal. Straight to the monkey.
How to live like a man.
Yeah, what can we use straight to the monkey for? I mean,
everything.
I think pretty much everything. That's a universal. Waiting to happen.
What can't we use straight to the monkey for?
Right.
Oh, my goodness. No, there's nothing. Straight to the monkey.
There it is. He had a pet monkey named Michaela.
Michaela. That's right.
That's crazy. Because one of his hobbies is sleeping.
Yes. Yes. The guys on Mostly Mets killed this. Like, they read through all of this stuff. Like, he has a Met car. Did you know that? Like, he has a classic car that he restored, and it's, like, orange and blue.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if he still has it now that he's in St. Louis. Just
probably
fascinating.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Wow.
So, Cal, no research, straight to the fun load. Or the big unload.
The monkey.
No research, nothing. Straight to the monkey.
If he hadn't looked at that curveball, he would be a legend here.
Yep.
Legend.
Yep. Could you imagine if he hits a home run there? They go on and win the World Series. And
he would still be here right now.
Right. A, he would still be here. B, the no research straight to the monkey would be legendary.
Oh, my goodness.
There would be straight to the monkey t-shirts.
Oh, that would have been the Mojo Rising of 2006.
Nailed
it. It would have been straight to the monkey.
Yep. All right. It is time for the big unload. So before we get to the big unload, boy, that was abrupt. Good work, Steve.
Record scratch.
Before we get to the aforementioned big unload, let's do a little word from our sponsor, Cal.
Right.
All
right.
This episode of Ready to Unload is sponsored by Blue Haven. Everybody, Blue Haven Sports Bar at 108 West Houston Street, the corner of Thompson and Greenwich Village, New York City. Cal, this place is awesome pants. It's a gorgeous sports bar. It's fantastic. We have a couple of notes on Wednesday night for the Giant game, big opening of the NFL season.
Right.
So here's what they're doing Wednesday night, Cal. You ready?
Yes.
100-ounce towers of Coors Light and Bud Draft for $25. Okay, that sounds like a lot of beer. Three-and-a-half-hour game, I can handle that.
Whew.
A tower of beer, Cal.
A tower, that's a lot.
That's right. They also are going to have a 6-foot-wide high-def screen for the game, like a big main screen, and then they're going to do 15 other TVs to watch all the games on a Sunday. Of course, all the games, everything will be on those TVs. They'll also have baseball. They'll have baseball going, but it's obviously Giants-Cowboys night. They have great wings, nachos, a steak sandwich that is some of the best in the city. And the biggest thing about this place, Cal, is it's a sports bar. And I love this. They are spot on. We actually talked about this when I met with them. It is a sports bar you will not be ashamed to bring your wife or girlfriend to.
Well, that's nice to know.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, wouldn't it be nice? Back in the day when we had girlfriends, now we have gumas. Nice. You know what I mean? Friday night for the wives, Saturday night for the girlfriends. No, we kid.
No, hey.
We joke. But wouldn't it have been nice to, take a girl and go watch, take Allison when you were courting and go watch Sunday football at, a place that didn't, have kids playing beer pong in the back or something?
Yeah, that would
have
been nice.
I have a small Asian boy I like to walk around with. That's all I'm saying.
Wow. Right in the middle of the promo? You got to bring that up? The first promo. And there goes our sponsor. Thanks. It was great, Blue Haven. We enjoyed it. Thank you, Peach. You have a small Asian boy you like to walk around with and watch football with? Odd. I don't know. There's a million odd things about that. Anyway, the bar opens at 11. They have Barclays Premier League Soccer. Going on. They will have all the games. They have the Sunday ticket on Sundays, 15 TVs, and the big screen. And the local team, of course, will be on the big screen always. Again, that's BlueHavenNYC.com. Check it out, guys, if you're the football season's coming up. If you need a place to camp out, guys and girls, everybody's welcome. If you need a place to camp out and watch all the games, go down to Blue Haven. It's really cool. So, big unload. We're going to have Finn calling in a couple of minutes. Okay. Before we get to the big unload, we're going to bring him on in a couple of seconds. I did want to ask you about tomorrow is our draft.
Right. Fantasy football draft.
Fantasy football draft. And while nobody wants to hear you talk about your children or your fantasy sports team, happy draft, Miss East Gal.
Oh, it's exciting.
Oh.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to sleep tonight.
I don't know.
And that's not an exaggeration.
I don't know what's going to be under my tree, my fantasy tree.
We talk about this every year. We've been doing this for 3 years, so this is the third time that we talk about it, or actually the sixth time if you count baseball too. But for some reason, the night of the fantasy football draft is always one of the most anticipated nights of the year for us, which sounds crazy. People who don't get fantasy sports think we're nuts. Can't understand it. But it's more than just, on the premise of it and on the surface, it's a bunch of guys sitting around picking fake players that you have no control over.
You're not making a strong case for us right now.
Sounds crazy. But it's so much more than that. It's the 12 of us getting together, twice a year to see, we hang out. Our lives have taken us in various paths over the years. This is the one night that brings it all back together.
Yeah. No, totally.
And that's really what it's about. And we talk football and we joke and it really is just a great night to hang out with your buddies. And that's why it's so anticipated, for me at least.
And, absolutely. And this is the ninth season for this particular league. 9 years.
That's a long time.
We've had one team leave. It's pretty good. Mm-hmm. And then our baseball season, we're in our sixth or fifth or whatever. But there are guys, there are guys across the country that this is their two nights out a year.
That's right.
This is it. They are swamped. they're swimming. They get two nights out with their boys a year now. And it's just so much fun. It's, and now we added in keepers and guys trading draft picks, and you know, it sounds dopey. It's not, like I said,
it sounds dopey to those that don't know about it or don't participate. If you participate in fantasy sports, anybody that's listening right now, you probably feel the same way. I would be surprised if you didn't.
We're in the baseball playoffs right now. In fact, we may be on a collision course, Brian.
I'm hoping not.
We may be on a collision course, you and me, kid.
That'll be some show next week.
That'll be some show next week. It'll be cricket. Like we can't speak. You can't speak for the week with your buddy. You can't speak.
I might have to call in sick.
But the other huge thing about it is, like I've told you before, I've turned it into sort of a cool thing for Teresa. Whereas my wife, you know, just mercilessly made fun of me for this. I mean, when we first started dating and stuff, like this whole concept, anybody she had been with before for an extended period of time was not into fantasy sports. And I dedicate a lot of time. It's a lot of time. Now, granted, with technology, it's become easier. Like with the iPhone and with the iPad and stuff like that, you can make changes. I can make changes on the fly, nice.
You can make a change right now.
That's right.
If you wanted to.
I just did. Foom, foom.
Whoa.
I just had sex twice. Foom, foom. Just right there. See, bachelor party quote.
That's a good one.
I had a good one.
Relevant now when you tie it into technology.
That's right. I had a good we were talking the other day about getting Zmed for we have one friend left who's yet to get married, and we're already planning his bachelor party. Because, again, talking about getting only one night out.
Right.
That's our buddy Nello's bachelor party is going to be our last. It's going to be our last stand. It's going to be Achilles' last stand, without a doubt. And we were thinking the other day about how much it might cost to get Adrian's med to go to it. Like, what could he be doing that he wouldn't want to come and hang out for like $2,000? He has to sing Little Demon, though. that's got to be in there.
You're talking the last one. If ever there was a time to pull out all the stops.
That's it.
I think that's it.
I mean, he's the movie. He's the pitch. He's the movie. But anyway, I'm so excited about the fantasy draft. I made some moves. I traded some. I don't have a first-round pick for the first time ever in any fantasy draft I've ever done.
You're one of – I don't recall anybody ever doing that before.
My war room – well, nobody's ever done it in our football.
In our league, yeah.
But I've done, you know, 25 drafts. I've been in a – hey, Cal, we're going to be in a league.
Yes, that's exciting.
We should tell the good people. We're going to be in a league.
Tell them.
You tell them.
Well, you kind of made the inroads.
But I'm doing the heavy lifting tonight, I feel like.
Nah, it's good. Our buddies that turn on the Jets, that are you know, just do some great stuff about the Jets. We've really found that they feel the same way as us about the Jets, and they take, you know, just like Brian Bassett that we had on a couple weeks ago, they take a real realistic approach to the Jets, and it's not media driven or narrative, you know, negative narrative. They have their own fantasy league, and they invited us to be part of the league. So Steve and I are going to represent RTU Sports.
We're going to co-run a team.
Yes, in that league.
Co-run a team. Never done that before.
So we're going to. So it'll be interesting to see how, you know, I think we have pretty different styles when we draft.
We do.
So it'll be interesting to see how those styles mesh.
Well, part of your
team.
Right. Part of your style is to hate your team immediately.
Yes. I just always hate my team. I hate my current team right now with my keepers. I hate it already.
Right. You have two keepers on the team. You hate them already.
Well, they're both hurt.
That, right. The so. Vegas put up round six for the over-under on Cal hating his team and declaring the draft a disaster.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had taken Jake Delhomme in the first round.
That was such a great night.
Never. Great night. It's been years. I've never heard the end of it.
Oh, that was such a great night.
But again, that's why we love this.
Yep. That was like 6 years ago, literally.
It was year two of the draft, so
it was
even longer.
7 years ago, that's right.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Jake Delhomme has not been good for 10.
Jake Delhomme has not been seen for 5.
Since that draft.
That's right. That's right. Enough about our draft. Again, no kids, no fantasy football, but you know what? Fantasy football for a minute. Because it's going to be really, really fun. And I just look forward to seeing the guys and hanging out and having a couple beers. And I don't have a pick till 24. So my pick is not till the end of the second round. The over-under on beers that I will have drank by then? What is Vegas? Where does Vegas put that, Cal?
By the second round?
By the time I make my first selection of the evening.
The over-under is at 4.
4 beers? That's it? Oh, man.
Well, I was going from the start of the draft. That
right.
Doesn't count.
Oh, okay.
Before.
Right. That doesn't count pre-draft beers in my war room.
The pregame show never counts as part
that's
of it.
Right. The pregame show in my war room does not. You're right. That's
No, you don't. No. 4.
So 4. Well, I'll tell you what. Vegas is burying the money line on that. That's minus $650 to make your money back there.
Well, that might be my fantasy entry this year, then.
That's right. All right. We've yapped enough. Let's get Finn in here, Cal, and talk a little bit about this. Cool. Cal, this is some music from the movie.
Nice.
Yeah. Let's play it. Peach, play this a little bit. Turn that up. We're going to have Finn tell us who this is, but the soundtrack sounds amazing on this. Well, I got used to the headache. This sounds cool. It's like Tom Waits-y. I said Nick. I think this theme is called After the Night is
Over. I can totally see this in a movie.
Oh, yeah. My goodness.
Right? It's like perfect.
Yep. All right, let's bring him in. An old friend of mine from Los Angeles, he's up in Boston right now in Massachusetts, Mark Finney. Welcome to Ready to Unload with Cal and Sam Pete. Gee whiz, Finn, how you been?
Party chat line?
What's that?
Is this a singles party chat line?
This is where the ladies are.
Yeah, this is Mark. I'm just looking for somebody to talk to. I don't know if there's anybody out there that's into bears. Steve, hey! My bad.
Let me know how the bear thing works out.
It's working out great, actually. It's working out great.
You immediately prompted PJ to play our RTU After Dark music. So good job.
That's fine. You know, I when I was young and thinner and handsome, I would get, you know, good offers from men, but now I get them from like the bigger, kind of hairier guys. You know, and even though I'm still kind of young, I'd be considered a cub. That bears date cubs. I don't know if
do they go cubbing?
They go cubbing, yeah. They take care of them. They bring them to their cave. They feed them for the winter. They, you know, amongst other things.
Right. Right. Well, gee whiz, it's good to hear from you. I have something.
You too, dude.
I have something off the bat that I've been waiting literally like 8 years. When did Deja Vu come out?
What? Deja Vu came out in 2006.
2006. So it's 6 years.
Yes.
I've been waiting to tell you this.
What? You hated it?
No. No, not at all.
Me what it was about?
I can't do that either.
All right.
But, do you know Rich Hutchman?
No. Who's that?
Rich
Did he play like the techie guy or something?
That's correct.
Yeah. I was going to read for that part, too.
Old friend of mine.
Yeah, I know who that is. Okay.
Do you remember
you
when I was
6 years for this? I haven't been doing anything. You could have asked me any time.
I was available for this, Steve. We could have
an email. I mean, anything.
No, do you remember? Do you remember I was doing that play, Dealer's Choice, for like 100 years in the Valley there?
I totally remember that. Absolutely.
He was.
I
in
also
that.
Remember you singing "La Vida Loca" every Sunday night at the Lava Lounge.
Oh, the Lava Lounge. We had good times. You want to laugh, Vin? Recently, my wife knows nothing of the L.A. years because I met her in 2007. So,
yeah.
And she does not do karaoke, does not. And, like, one of our first dates was, like, an intro to the guys. Cal, it was Rich's birthday party.
Okay.
Actually, before he married, or right after he married Allison. So we're at this karaoke place, Vin, and I'm Sam Pete. You know, I'm doing my thing. I'm laying my thing. That's right. And in La Vida Loca, I put in La Vida Loca. I do the whole thing with the dance and the thing and the leg kick. And she...
the leg kick.
Because she's looking at me like, what just happened?
What were you doing?
Who are you?
This was all before our souls were broken, by the way.
That's correct. Before Los Angeles had its way with our souls.
Exactly.
Well, listen, Cal and I, we want to talk to you about the Red Sox first. I'm glad we got that much out of the way because, you know, that was eating at me.
Yeah, that. I mean, I'm so glad you got that. I mean, because I can feel the weight lifted off your shoulders.
I will tell you, Finn, and I'm being completely sincere here, that was one of the coolest moments. That was one of the coolest movie-watching experiences, though, that I've ever had because I had two people in that movie in prominent roles. Like, you weren't, you know, guy behind the guy. You know, you weren't driving the bus.
Right,
you know?
Right.
You had a nice little part in that movie. Hutch had about three scenes in that movie. And, Cal, it was just so cool to, like, watch a movie and, like, wow. It's like two
people.
Well,
you know, it's come up again a lot lately because of Tony Scott.
Right, that's right. That was
a lot
Tony
of people
Scott.
Have kind of found out that I was in this movie because Tony Scott. People are like, oh, wait, weren't you in that movie? Yeah, Tony Scott. And so a lot of people have been kind of asking me, like, oh, what was he like? And I do want to say, I mean, it's horrible what happened, and he was such an awesome guy. He treated me so well and made me feel like I belonged there. And, you know, there was huge stars there. He made me feel like I belonged there. You know, I he was amazing, and it's a real bummer that what happened with him, you know?
Yeah, no, so, and you know what's funny, Finn? Hutch said the same thing. I mean,
yeah,
Hutch said
it was awesome.
The same thing about him. He said he was the nicest, you know, down to earth, and he said made him belong. You know, Hutch told the story of he has the scene with Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
You know, he's got this big scene with Denzel Washington when I think they're at the funeral, I guess.
Yeah, like I've never seen it. I don't know what it is.
But there's like this big scene or whatever, Cal, and Hutch was saying, like, it's my scene with Denzel Washington, like, and I'm screwing up hitting my mark, and I'm, like, a little nervous, and Hutch had done a lot of work till that point, but it's freaking Denzel Washington.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And Tony's
got... My first scene of... The entire job was with Denzel Washington. My first morning was with Denzel Washington, and I was extremely scared.
Oh,
and but he was great too. They were, I mean, they were just very cool and welcoming and yeah. So,
awesome.
And it's weird.
It's a shame. It is.
It is a shame. We actually we dedicated our last day of filming to Tony Scott because it was like it happened like 2 days before that, you know.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So, anyways, yes, I'm glad to be talking to you, and I do miss you. I haven't seen you for a long time, but we had a lot of fun in Los Angeles. You,
we
me,
did.
And what's that other guy's name? The ball
I can't
guy.
Remember. I can't remember.
I hope he's listening.
He's short, and he's awfully hairy. Speaking of bears.
He is very hairy. He's very hairy, but he's very funny as well. He's
yes,
one of the
is.
Funniest guys I know.
And you know what, Finn? These guys know him. I mean, Cal.
Oh, they know
Cal.
Terry.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Sure.
Oh, yeah, from the New York days.
Right on.
Right
on.
All
right.
When we all lived in Power Street after college,
Right on. Okay.
I brought the boys around, you know, just like, you know, just like, you know, Marco and those guys.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, by the way.
I love those guys.
Jadaro has a message for you. He just texted me.
He just texted me? Wait, can I guess what it is?
Yes, go ahead.
Is it about coffee?
It is.
He wants his $1.75.
He said $1.25, so you could have gotten away with that.
You know what? Whenever I ask him for it, it's $1.75. He's ruined it. We've had this gag going for like 7 years about I bought him a coffee one day at Buzz Coffee, and I've been asking him for the money ever since. And the sad part of it is I really need it, actually.
Right. That's right.
So if he's listening, if he could put it in a PayPal account, that would be awesome.
All right, let's get to the Sox, and then we'll get to the movie.
You want to talk about the Sox? Okay, yeah, let's do it.
Let's talk about the Sox. Cal is a big Bobby Valentine guy from his days with the Metropolitans. How's that going? How's that going over there?
Not well. I don't know if you watch ESPN at all, but
I'm not familiar with that station.
I don't know. I don't think he's going to be here next year. He just made some, I guess they interviewed him yesterday and they said, what's going on with you coming back? And he was very gracious about it, saying, you know, I don't expect them to, you know, worry about my schedule, you know, but whatever happens, happens. And I think honestly, from the get-go, it was bad. I mean, from the very beginning when he was pounding Euclid and making comments, I feel like he should have kept it in the clubhouse, and I feel like it was just a runaway train since then, and obviously they're playing so horrible.
Ben, do you think that he's not going to come back even after this trade? Because I thought that this trade was kind of like a clean house type of deal, and it was almost like they were siding with Bobby Valentine, and they want to kind of fill the clubhouse with his guys.
I mean, who are his guys, though? You
well,
know,
he has guys, like, he's got
does he
right
have
now.
Guys left? Does he have
right.
guys? Does he have guys, or does he have guys that he wants? I mean, I feel like he's next in the cleaning house. I don't know. I mean, if I had to put down my money, I don't know if he'd be there next year. I don't think he would be. But if he is, then hey, I mean, look, I think right now it's worth trying anything. Maybe it was get rid of those guys. Let's give Bobby a chance to pick some guys and try it again next year. You know.
See, Bobby is a bit of an acquired taste, would be putting it nicely.
Sure.
I've always liked him. Well, that's where I was going with this. In two-thirds of a season, I'm curious to see what Red Sox fans think about him, because it did take a couple of years for Met fans to warm up to him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think New York and Boston are similar in their fanship and in their passion for sports. You know, like, if they're doing great, they love you. If you're doing bad, they hate you, and they love talking about it. And so I think if they gave Bobby Valentine a chance and they at least went to the playoffs next year, they'd love him and they'd want him back for a third year. You know what I mean? I don't know. I mean, I like him. I don't think Boston wants anything to do with the Red Sox at all right now, coach or the players, you know, like, they just have let people down all season, from the attitudes of the players like Beckett to Valentine starting all that drama at the beginning of the season. Euclid leaving here was, as much as they may have been done with him, was a pretty big deal. He was very loved here, you know?
But you know what? It carries over, Finn, from last year, the way that it ended with Francona.
That, you know,
right?
The Francona, yes. Yes, but, I mean, I feel like every season, you know, it's like that saying, it's that girlfriend, you know, I'm not going near her again, I'm not going near her again, she did this, she did that. Then when she comes back around, you always go back. Or, like, the Sopranos. The Sopranos, they split the season in two halves, the final season, and I heard more people say, I am not going to watch that. As soon as that aired, they were right there watching the second half. And it's the same thing with sports. Everybody
That's
can
true.
Swear up and down. They're mad about last season. They hit this. They hate this. They hate that. They're right there April 4th, you know?
Oh, yeah. You don't have
tickets.
To tell us. We're Met fans.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
We're back every April 4th, too, like idiots, like lemmings heading to City Field.
Yeah.
Oh, please.
Yeah. So, look, the Francona thing, I think, was the biggest one of the biggest catastrophes we've ever had. That guy, I feel like, got hung out to dry.
Oh,
that's my opinion.
Totally. And, the planting of stories and suddenly he's like a meth addict or he's cooking, he's on Breaking Bad in the clubhouse. Like, I mean,
I would love that episode if he was on Breaking Bad. That would be a great episode. Walt, he would be like, listen, Heisenberg, you're starting first. No, I feel like Tony Francona, look, who else gave us a World Series? Nobody.
Right.
Him,
and he
gets two of them.
Right. I feel like Tito probably has great acting chops, too. He probably does.
He did. He had to act his way throughout 7 years of coaching the Red Sox.
And by the way, write this down. Pounding Euculus is a great band name. A great band.
Did you see Euculus on Man vs. Food?
No. Oh.
There was a great episode of Man vs. Food where they were at this place called Eagle's Deli here in Boston, and apparently they make, like, one of the biggest subs ever. And so the Adam Richman guy went up against this really big dude, and Euclid was in the deli in, like, a suit and a loosened tie eating. And they're like, hey, look who's here. I don't know if it was planted, but it looked like he really just was there after a meeting or something.
Right.
And... It was just very funny. It was very funny.
Euke was going to pick up a 7-pound hoagie before heading off to the ballpark.
It is Boston. Boston.
No. Well, and they're eating fried chicken and drinking beer in the clubhouse anyway.
Yeah,
so.
Bartolo Colon was mad that he missed out on the fried chicken stuff. It's like, after I left, they had fried chicken?
where was this when I was around? What do you guys
like, come on, man. I love that he could just be on that mound, just overweight. It's awesome.
Oh. He's like, you guys put an omelet station in here? What is going on?
On the mound. On the mound they put it. He was cooking and throwing the ball right out there. I mean, with the way pitchers are nowadays, I could be pitching for them.
Oh, absolutely. If you can throw hard. I mean, I go back to the old, and Cal will too, like the old Aurelio Lopez days, Senior Smoke.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Rich Garces. Like that fat bastard.
Fernando Valenzuela was one of the greatest pitchers of all time, and he was like my size.
He was having chili con carne.
That might be stretching it. I'm bigger than him.
Yeah, but not by much. And you throw
as well. Can I tell you one thing about this trade that I would like to propose?
Absolutely.
So this big trade, they cleared up all this money, right? All this money.
A lot
gone.
Of money.
We got money now. We got money, okay?
Right.
This is my pitch of what to do with the money. Take all the money, go after one person. Morrissey. I want Morrissey on the Red Sox. First base, outfield, I don't care where you put him. I just want him there. Take that money, go after Morrissey. It would be amazing. People would be running onto the field with flowers during the game. They could play his songs during between innings. I would buy season tickets.
That's right.
He can't hit, but he is an amazing fielder. He loves to catch. He's not a catcher. He's a receiver, from what I
That's
hear.
That's right. He's not a pitcher. He's a catcher. The captain, Varitek, retired. You could use a catcher on that team.
I mean, come on. Imagine him behind the mound, the hair, the pompadour kind of sticking out the side of the mask. You know, on the back of the jersey just says Morrissey.
Right.
And they don't wear names.
That's right.
Put a big number. I'd have a big foam finger that says Morrissey in the crowd.
Exactly. It would be a very melancholy clubhouse. I'll tell you that much.
It would be. People around here in Boston would be like, dude, who's this guy catching? What's going on here? Like, this guy, he's just all bummed out. He's bummed out, dude. He's like, come on, Morrissey, get in the game, will you, brother?
He's a Bobby V kind of guy. I can see that.
Bobby V would love him. Yeah, he's a press conference. Bobby V would be like, you know what? We had a good game tonight. We may have lost, but I'm telling you right now, Morrissey, he showed up. The kid showed up. I like what he's doing out there.
I love this idea. Everybody's got to be
Thank
sort
you.
Of... Everybody's got to be somewhat happy, though, Finn, that they did trade all these guys. And by the way,
oh God, yeah, God, yeah.
We were talking about fantasy sports right before you came on. This is a trade that if it went down in a fantasy league, no, everybody would reject. Like, everybody would be emailing the commissioner and be like, "Are you kidding me? You can't allow this to go through. What are you talking
about?"
Beckett
right.
would quit.
Right, people would quit that fantasy league. And yet somehow the Dodgers are lousy. Lousy with
my
cash.
My favorite word about fantasy league is fantasy. It can't be a more, like, kind of insulting name to the people that play it. Like, how's your fantasy league? Like, it's not like
a imaginary world you live in.
They could just, yeah, they could just call it, like, how's your fake baseball league or something. No, they're like, how's your fantasy going? How's your dream going? Your imaginary world that you made up. Like, grown men, like, well, my fantasy, like, I have my own fantasy league going on, which obviously with Morrissey, you know.
That's correct. It's so true, though. It really is. We really need to that's why rotisserie baseball, which is what it was
right.
originally.
Much better name, which, but of course, makes me think of chicken.
That's right. Suddenly I'm hungry, and the next thing you know...
I know. They'd be like, all right, Mark, who are you picking? I'd be like, I don't know about you guys, but I'm starving right now. Anybody hungry?
That's right.
But
no. You always eat these things, Finn. You always eat at these things.
I've been to them. Trust me. I go just for the food. I don't know anything about the draft. I'm like, I'll take Louis Tion. They're like, what? No, dude. No.
I'll take that hamburger that you're holding in your hand right now. And
in reality, people are very happy about the trade. Beckett, people were so sick of that. He's gone. We're glad he's gone because of his attitude. If he had a better attitude and played crappy, we'd be fine with it. If he had some sort of humble something to him where he'd be like, all right, I'm playing crappy. I'm going to try to do better. But he just spit his tobacco and had his hunting cap and was like, I don't care, you know. Like, that's why people are glad he's gone, because he just was kind of a jerk.
But what about Gonzalez?
And, well, no one has anything against Gonzalez, but you know what? He too much money, and he wasn't setting the world on fire, you know? So it's like, okay, no big deal. We tried it, you know. I mean, it would have been nice to keep him. Nobody had anything against him, but it was a lot of money, man, a lot of money.
Yeah.
Did you ever
– Money that could go to Morrissey.
Well, Crawford is the key. Crawford is the key there, though, Finn. I mean, you just got off him like $130 million.
Right. Now we don't have to deal with that.
Yep. And talk about
it.
Yeah.
And the Dodgers know he just had Tommy John surgery last week, right?
Right.
Like, did anybody
do you realize that? Do you realize this could potentially go down in history as the worst move a team has ever made?
You know, what's great about it is, like, do the Dodgers have ESPN? Because I don't know. Do they get ESPN?
I don't think so.
What do you mean you just had Tommy John surgery? What are
you
talking about?
Dude, you know they were broke last year. They got their cable shut off, so they don't have ESPN. They were watching TV with, like, a tinfoil antenna in the clubhouse, so they had no idea what was going on with Carl Crawford.
It feels like Magic Johnson was looking at fantasy stats from 3 years ago, and he saw, let's get these guys, Crawford,
he's like,
Gonzalez.
He's like, look at this Crawford guy.
That's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Well,
Magic, that was 3 years ago.
Again, Magic, fantasy, I don't know. It's just not working out.
The worst talk show in the history of mankind. Finn, Chevy Chase or Magic Johnson, worst talk show?
Dana Carvey.
Ooh.
The Taco Bell Dana Carvey hour. Do you remember that?
I do.
You know what? I shouldn't say. You know what? They had great. Robert Smigel wrote on that show, but the show was horrible. It's not his fault.
So did Louis C.K.
He did, yeah.
Louis C.K. was a writer on that show, too.
I guess I'll go back and say that probably Magic had the worst talk show.
Well, that's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
He said unbelievable every 4 seconds. You know who used to do a really good Magic? Terry does a very solid magic. That's unbelievable.
You know, I know Terry's good impressions. Can I tell you a story about Terry? So I did this one-man show in L.A., right? I put my heart and soul into this show. I got up on stage and I poured out my guts in this solo performance, this one-man show talking about my life. And I have a scene in the show where Terry comes in. He plays a pizza delivery guy, right? He comes in. He goes, yeah, pizza from Mark Finney. I'm like, huh, I'm on stage in the middle of the show. He goes, okay, well, you ordered it. The L.A. Weekly, a week later, says, reviewing my show, impersonator extraordinaire Terry Scannell was great as the pizza guy. I'm like, what? I'm like, this is my show. He played a pizza guy for 5 minutes. The guy gets, like, an Oscar nomination for coming into the show for 5 minutes.
Something I learned very early on, Finn, when we were in college together and we would be acting and stuff, and for those of you who don't know, we're talking about a guy named Terry Scannell. Go IMDb him.
There's a character based on him in the movie. There's somebody that plays Terry in the movie.
Awesome. Yes. We're definitely going to talk about the movie in a minute. I learned that very early, Finn. If you let him on stage, good luck.
You're done. No, I know. I was on stage with him for years together. I wrote with him for years together.
Yep.
He's tough to beat. He's a funny, funny, funny guy. It's
their sketch group in L.A. Was very, very good. Very, very solid. You guys were sort of at the turn of the sketch. You know, you guys went up to Aspen. You sort of crashed the comedy festival. I feel like you guys were sort of at the... really at like the turn when sketch started to become big again? Do you feel
I feel like we were when it started to turn and become a big again and they were giving out deals for sketch shows, which we got one, then all of a sudden, very quickly, it all disappeared. Our deal, other people's deals. People started making sketch shows by just casting a bunch of different people and doing something like a Mad TV or something. Right after us, they stopped going after independent groups, you know, that already had a thing going on. So, yeah, we were performing in a heyday, but kind of, I don't know, it was like, I'll quote Dickens, my friend Charles Dickens, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times.
Yeah.
Or Charlie, as I call
him. Right. Do you feel like UCB... or Chuck when we're drunk. Do you feel like...
Yeah, Chuck D.
Do you feel like UCB was sort of like the I know they handpicked and took people from UCB and stuff like that for whether it was Saturday Night Live and stuff, but UCB started the school and everything in New York and do you feel like
Go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, do you feel like that sort of took away the idea of the ensemble that was getting picked up, the actual group that was getting picked up for a pilot or whatever?
Yes and no. I mean, even before UCB, you had Second City and Groundlings and Improv Olympic. And, you know, they were doing it even before the independent groups. You know, then the independent groups came along, got very big, different groups like Kids in the Hall, The State. And then they kind of went back to just picking people from places like schools like UCB, Second City and stuff like that. And, I mean, UCB is huge right now, especially in Los Angeles. It's really big out there right now. You're probably even bigger than like the Groundlings or Improv Olympic. I'm gonna get beat up by a bunch of improvisers for saying that, probably. Like a gang of really quirky people.
That'll be one of the funniest beatdown sessions ever.
Oh, it'll be hilarious. They will be killing me, but I will be laughing so hard.
Right, exactly. They'll do it in a really funny manner with like maybe a prop or something.
Or I won't be laughing because I'll be so bitter that their jokes are funnier than mine. Comedian, like, sketch and improv people are real jerks, can I tell you? We do not like people to be funnier than us.
Of course.
We don't like that. Like, if you hear somebody's funnier than you or making a joke that you think that, and especially when you know it's funnier than yours, you get really bitter and really mad and... I mean, maybe it's just me. I think Terry would say that that's just me that gets mad about that stuff. But.
You know what, though, Finn? I think that's true. I think even back then, I found it sort of cutthroaty among the groups themselves. in the sense that
it was a little bit. Well, especially in that Los Angeles scene, because everybody's trying to get a job, you know.
Right, exactly, and everybody's trying to get the kids in the hall deal or some sort of pilot deal or whatever, and it got very like where was that joint that you guys were sort of headlined for the longest time on Sunset? Was that on Sunset?
Well, that was with another group. We were over the Lava Lounge. That was another group that we were with. But then me and Terry and
you're talking about the Knitting Factory. Yes. That was on Hollywood.
Duh. That was on Hollywood.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was our spot. You know, that was our thing for a few years. We did that every week, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you guys were like in residence at the Knitting Factory.
Yes.
You know, on doing killer shows and stuff like that. I came to see that show a couple of times. But it, I remember it being like, oh, this group does this, this group does that. And then you guys crashed Aspen.
Well, no, we didn't crash. Our old group crashed Aspen, and I actually didn't go to that. We are the new group,
right?
The one me and Terry and Ed formed. We got invited to Aspen twice in a row. So Terry was in the old group. I had left the old group, but they crashed Aspen. Then in our new group, we got invited to Aspen and played there,
right?
Which was really cool. That was for the kids, yes.
Yeah, for the kids. Great sketch group, by the way. Do you still do any sketch, Mark? Are you still doing it up there at all?
I haven't acted or done sketch comedy in quite a while. You know, I mean, once in a while I'll do a story show. You know, I did stuff like Mortified and Moth and stuff like that. But I did one-man shows towards the end there. When I started writing more so, both Terry and myself just really buried ourselves in the writing and became writing partners and kind of stopped doing sketch and improv. If it came up, we did it, or I would do it if it came up, but it really just became all about the writing for the past like 5-6 years, to be honest with you.
Do you think after you're done, you know, and you put Fat to bed and everything, and you get it, go through whatever, and we're gonna talk about it in just a sec, but do you think that you'll go back to it, Finn, maybe even just to decompress?
I don't know, man. I got to be honest with you. I miss it and I love it, but I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm kind of in this weird state in my life where I've been back in Boston for a couple of years. I've thought a lot about if I'm going to go back to L.A. or not, but now I'm committed to this film. So if I went back to L.A., maybe I would jump back into it, or I would just go back to writing at McDonald's every day with Terry and watching his kid play in the Playland, you know? That's where we were writing.
Right. I feel like for me there are certain facets of performing that I'll always go back to, or I want to go back to, even if it's just for like a couple of weeks ago. I got to play a band reunion for my buddy of mine got married, and he had all his bands play on the Saturday night. He got married on Friday night. He had all his bands play at a bar.
Mm-hmm.
On the Saturday night, it was great. It was really good fun. I hadn't played in a band in, you know, 4 or 5 years. And it's satisfied as sort of Jones that, you know, I don't know if there's any, I just wonder if sketch is like that for you, because you are so good at it. You know, it was always very natural feel for you. So
yeah, I do think about it, and I think I will do it again someday, especially if I did it on stage with like Terry and those guys again as like a one-off reunion thing, or if I got the energy to form a new group with friends of mine that I've always wanted to perform with, you know, I think that is definitely something that I do think about doing, whether it was here or Los Angeles or New York or something. Yeah, no, I do think about performing, but right now I think it's just all about writing for me, and maybe if something happens with this film, trying to direct another film, you know?
Yeah, Finn, we want to talk about
that. And of course, dance, the dance that I left behind, the dancing.
Finn, we don't need to get into that right now.
You want to talk about what? The movie?
The movie, yeah. But before we get into the movie, I want to hear, we heard the song at the beginning when you came on. I wanted to hear who did that song. That was great.
Great song. It's by this band, Eldridge Rodriguez. That's the band name. It's nobody's name in the band. I got to be honest with you, it's actually the song that made me want to write the movie. You know, I work at these clubs here in Boston, these rock clubs, and I had seen this band play a couple times, and around the time that I saw them, I was thinking about writing this movie, and when I saw them perform that song for maybe the third or fourth time, I was like, I have to write this movie and try to make this movie just so I can put this song in the movie. And honest to God, that song, it's at the end of the movie, it's over the credits, it's this really cool moment in the film, and it inspired me to actually write the movie and go through with the movie, and I've become great friends with the guy in the band, and they're going to put out the soundtrack on his own label, and yeah, so it's that's kind of the story behind that song.
That's so that's also, that was sort of like the impetus for the song. The movie is called Fat. Is it Fat a movie or just Fat? I want to make sure
Fat.
I'm saying it right. Okay, cool.
Just Fat.
Honestly, when I started reading about it a little while ago, Finn, when you got the Facebook page going and stuff like that, so I was intrigued because I have dealt with food issues myself in my life. I know PJ, our producer, but also one of our closest friends for 100 years, is also, you know, we've all had food issues. We all come from families that have people with food issues or food addiction. And stuff. And it really, honestly, Finn, it looked fascinating to me. So first question is, obviously, or my first question is, some of it looks, obviously, a bunch of it is autobiographical, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I tend to, most things that I've written or performed always end up being kind of memoir, biographical, personal about my life. You know what I mean? Like, so... This definitely hits on a few different elements in my life.
The the story from what I read is basically just about somebody who has a food addiction problem, has no sort of regard. Well, why don't you tell us what the movie's about? Why the hell am I doing it? Go ahead.
Yeah, it's about this guy who this character Ken, who he has a food addiction, you know, and he just eats and he eats and he eats and he's obviously trying to fill some kind of void in his life, something that's broken. But he just has no regard for his health and really no regard for his life. So he smokes, he eats, he drinks, he's angry at the world. He blames everybody for every issue that he has. And he's got to change. He's, you know, but he won't change. And he's told by doctors and friends and strangers, you know, you got to do something here. And at a certain point in the movie, it becomes a love story. He meets a girl who's also overweight. And like most dudes, he thinks he can do better, in quotes. You know, like, why should he date an overweight girl? So he wants the hot girl, of course. And but this girl could change his life. This girl could save his life. You know, she gets her situation, but she's mentally healthy. She's like, I know I'm overweight, but I'm trying to change it, and I'm not gonna be mean to everybody else because of it. And he wants to commit, but he won't. And you know, it's basically, is love gonna save this guy? Is he gonna save himself? What's gonna happen to this guy and his life? And that's essentially the movie, you know, without giving the ending away.
Right. excuse me. That's it. Sounds fantastic. You shot it around Boston and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Finn, how much easier is it? You know, we were in LA, you know, 10, 12 years ago and stuff like that for a long time. I'm curious how much easier, not easier. Easier is the wrong word. How much? How different it was to try to shoot this movie and get this movie done now? Would it have been possible even? You know, 6, 7 years ago?
No, not for me. I can answer that pretty easily. You know, I left LA a couple of years ago. I was kind of going through a hard time. I was getting very exhausted, very depressed. I, you know, was dealing with some personal issues. I wanted to come home and just take a break. And when I came back here, a few things that I learned was that I didn't need to be, you know, chained down by this idea of like, selling a big script. Or, you know, I had some good years and some bad years out there, but I learned to love being creative again by doing it here without the stress of Los Angeles breathing down my neck. The other thing I found here was how welcomed I was. You know, sometimes you feel like you can't go home again. I was gone for a long time. I was gone for over 10 years.
Right.
And I got so welcomed back, not only by my friends already, but this whole entire amazing community of artistic people, especially this, there's this amazing music scene here where not only is the music great, but the people are great. And just by working at the clubs, I've met like 200 of them, and they've all become, I can say, friends of mine. I love them. And it was really their support that made this movie happen. I couldn't have made this movie in L.A., not because I wouldn't have the support or the friends, but it would have cost money, bottom line. Everybody's making an independent film there. You know, nobody cares if your little movie, you really want to make it. Here, it's kind of a rare bird. No, not everyone's making a movie here. And so when these people saw that I was trying to do this thing, they really rallied behind me, not only by giving me their music, but to giving me their support and their friendship. And, I mean, everybody worked for free, cast, crew, locations, all for free. I made the movie with one of my really good friends, P.H. O'Brien, who's a great documentary filmmaker. He had all the equipment, so we didn't pay for any of that. We did a Kickstarter where we raised like $4,000, and it was just strictly for emergencies and for food. And, you know, again, it was just – and, of course, I had great support from Los Angeles, but the people here were just so amazing. I mean, I can't – this movie would not have gotten made – without this city, without the people in this city, without, and especially without this artistic slash music scene here in Boston. So, yeah, I mean, short, long answer, that I just gave you is no, I don't think I could have. Not then, not now. So here was the place and here was the time, you know?
Finn, where do you take this movie from here? I know are you in the editing process right now? Like, it's not in the can yet, right, in full?
Yeah, we just shot it. We literally just wrapped shooting a week ago, and now we are going to start editing. My editor, Mike Gill, who's a great local filmmaker, editor slash musician, he directs all the videos for all the bands around town. We're going to sit down, and we're just going to start editing. And, you know, we're already getting some attention. We've already gotten some calls from Los Angeles. We got people around here we're going to meet with. We're going to try to get some post-production money. We're going to promote the movie. We're going to try to get into festivals. We're going to have a screening here. We're just going to keep going with it. You know, we shot the film. It was hard, but it was exciting. We got great footage. My cast was amazing. I mean, I cast a lot of musicians. I cast a lot of people that weren't exactly actors because I knew they were talented, and I knew they could do the part. I wrote the part for them, and they all absolutely killed it. Like, the
That's
actors
cool.
and the non-actors in the movie killed it. My crew, unbelievable. I can't say enough about them. Some were experienced, some weren't. I mean, I had people from, like, I had a mom who was driving here from Maine, and then again, I had, like, a 19-year-old kid who was my first AD who goes to film school in North Carolina, and everybody was amazing, you know? And this music scene, all these songs that we got, you know, it's not like, oh, here's my buddy's song. No, these songs, these bands are like absolute top notch. The songs, they fit perfectly. They're beautiful songs. They're great. You've heard some of them. And you know, you got all these movies that, you know, the backdrop is Brooklyn or L.A. or Chicago. And as much as the movie is about weight, it's also a love letter and the backdrop to Boston, the music scene, and what that represents for me and the characters in the movie and the people of the city, you know. Since I came home and got welcomed, I wanted to give that back, you know. So that's a really, really key thing to the whole film.
Finn, I wonder. It sounds it's just so cool, and I gotta say, as a friend, it's somewhat moving and exciting to me to see that you've been able to do this, because this is something we all talked about. We sat around and talked about this. We talked about making your own way, making your own career, making your own art, whatever it was. I always think back to Swingers, you know, and I think back to Favreau and Swingers and why Favreau wrote Swingers. It was because, you know, he couldn't get this audition. He couldn't get that audition. He said, you know what? F it. I'm just going to write something for myself. And nobody wants to cast me as a leading man. Screw you. I'll cast myself as a leading man. And I always go back to that movie. And I remember us, you know, especially you and Terry, of course, but, you know, all of us sitting around and saying, you know what? If we can't get that break, we'll make our break. And I love that it's, you know, at this point in our life, Finn, because, you know, we're around the same age and stuff like that. It's not even about that anymore. You know,
yeah,
it's
we're
not
both
about,
21.
That's correct. We're both 23 and live. you know, but it's not even about like making a break anymore or anything like that. It's about just doing something that you're proud of, that is an expression, that is a whether the film is a piece of art or it's a autobiographical, whatever it is. It's not about like getting a break so we can win an Oscar. It's about, you know, being able to do it, and you're doing it. And I think that's, man, I really do think that's super cool.
No, thank you. I mean, yeah, I you know, people like us, and, you know, and I know I went through it with Terry. We went through every up and down. We had the big agents, the small agents. We sold stuff. We had years where we couldn't do anything. And I think we tried to do it both ways. We tried to do it the Hollywood way, and we always tried to do it our way, too. And when I came back here, I remember when I first went to L.A., it was just about, I want to be a millionaire and have lots of money and hookers.
Yes.
And now I just want the hookers. So, you know, that's... I still want the hookers. That will never go away.
You know,
when I came back here,
I was just gonna say my buddies make fun of me because I refuse to watch Entourage. I never watched that show
I read for Turtle.
I did know that. I did,
and
Jerry.
Our buddy Jerry got the part. You know Jerry?
I met Jerry when he was doing West of Brooklyn.
68. Yeah, Western Brooklyn. Yeah, the play that Terry was in. Yeah, no, he's perfect for the part too. He is that kid, you know.
Oh, he totally was. Yes. But you know,
when I came back here, my friend Squirrel was like, "You got to make this movie now, you know.
Right.
Just do it now while you're there, you know." So
yeah. Well, what's your time frame? When you finish it up, where can people that are listening to our show, will they be able to see it? Will it be in any sort of limited release? Will it be only in festivals? What's the deal?
I think we're going to try to have a trailer in a couple weeks. We're going to go out and look for some more money. We're going to do a rough cut. I think in maybe a few months, we'll start figuring out a way to distribute it independently, try to get it in some theaters independently, have screenings, but we're also going to be submitting to festivals. I think we got like a three-prong attack, you know, like the internet, the independent screenings, and the festivals, you know?
Right.
And so I hope by the end of the year, somebody can see it somewhere, whether it's sold or whether it's just independently showing or whether it's online or something like that. And we're going to be, you know, in the internet world, just letting people know what's up. And, you know, this is where the 12 years in LA will come in handy, because I'm just going to hit everybody that I know and say, here's the movie. This is what it is. If you're interested, I think at the very least, what would be great for this movie is it's a calling card to get money to do another movie. You know, it's like,
right,
all right, these guys made this movie for no money, and it's good enough that we see what they can do with money. So,
right,
you know what I mean? And obviously, the best case scenario is we go to a festival and it gets sold, and you know what I mean? And I get all the hookers that I want. You know?
That's right. Finally with the hookers.
That's the best case scenario.
I got to go get the hookers. Did I say hookers? You did. You said hookers. You got to talk about just real quick. And then PJ has a question for you about, I want to put
PJ Byrne?
No, PJ, PJ Byrne's way too big time for our program. You know that.
Oh yeah, well, he is absolutely. I know. Do you don't need to
talk about a guy who works a ton? God bless him.
He's a worker.
No, PJ, who has? I wanted to see if you needed a score for your film. I know you have all the needle drop music, but I wanted to see if you needed a score.
I would love to listen to anything you got. I mean, I'm taking everybody's music and being like, all right, this works here, this works here, this works there. So I
you should talk
it.
To our boy PJ, who has
okay.
This is not a good example of what he'll do for you, but he has.
But I would love that, though. I would love that.
No, seriously, he scored. PJ, when did you score that that other movie? When did you you scored an indie film? What was that, last year? I think it was last year.
I love you still have the Hollywood in you, you're because you're pitching me on your own podcast.
I'm putting people together. This is what I do. Keith, when did you score that movie?
You're not getting a finder's fee, first of all.
Retainer.
That's his angle.
That's all
that's
it is.
That's his whole angle.
He wants his percentage.
I know this guy. Trust me.
No, seriously, Peach, when did you score that movie?
Guides, I did, I guess, well, we finished in 08.
Okay.
And
was
then
that...
I think they got it out by 09.
Well,
yeah,
what was the movie?
It was a little indie by a company called Purple Thread out of Berlin it was a quasi-documentary, mostly a comedy, about the twisted tour guides of Berlin. And how they're being taken over by Americans.
Where can I see it?
Just there to slum. Right now, I think the only place to get it is Creative Commons.
Okay. Well, look, man, I would love to hear anything you got, so you should send me whatever you want.
Yeah, PJ is, and I'm not exaggerating, Finn, when I tell you, PJ is a brilliant musician. I've been in bands with him for 15 years.
I'm the best composer that no one's ever heard.
Maybe
listen,
ever.
I'll take PJ's word for it. Not the guy who sang Livin' La Vida Loca.
It wasn't the song, then it was the dance. Let's just be honest.
It was everything, dude. It was the whole package, okay? I can't say I remember seeing it for the first time, and Terry's like, it's my buddy Steve. I'm like, that guy?
He's straight? Are you sure? Are you sure?
Can I say one more thing? I know you probably got to wrap up soon.
No, go ahead.
I just want to say one more thing about the movie real quick. I can't go through the list of all the people that have helped me, but if anybody's listening to this right now, there are so many people that helped me here, and there's so many names. And if I say, like, 1, 2, 3 names, I feel like I got to say them all. So I just need to say that in a big blanket statement, everybody that helped with this movie was amazing. In every single capacity, from the small to the big, I would never have been able to make this movie without all these people. You know, this is not my film. This is, like, everybody's film. And that's the way I felt from the beginning, and that's the way I'm going to feel all the way till the end. So I just want to make that clear. That's just like the one thing I want to say about this movie.
That's awesome. I mean, it's very, very cool. And you got a great star, because I met Mel a couple times.
Oh, Mel. Well, you know Mel. Do you know Mel?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah,
I
Mel.
Do.
Yeah,
I,
Mel's awesome.
I met him a couple times. I'm not, you know, we're not boys or anything, but I met him a couple times. He seemed like a really nice guy. Super, super talented. I mean,
oh,
really,
great actor. Total,
guy.
Total method actor, New York actor, went to SUNY Purchase. I mean, absolute, nailed it. Absolutely nailed it. I couldn't have had a better person playing it. Between him and my cameraman, I just sat in a chair and ate food and said, action, cut, action, cut. I didn't do it. I didn't even say action sometimes. I just said, go.
Right. You went Coppola on it. Right.
I just pointed. I had food in my mouth. I just pointed for them. You guys, do whatever it is you do. Go. Go.
You went Francis Ford on them. That's it.
I went so Francis Ford on. Absolutely. I was drinking and smoking and eating.
Yes.
Can you talk about what I've eaten just during this interview?
I would love to hear. I would love to hear what you've eaten during this interview.
I just had, I had a cheese. I started with a cheese sandwich. And then Dunkin' Donuts has a new Oreo donut. Have you tried
that?
Yes.
Wow.
I've seen.
They take a donut and they crumble an Oreo on top because the donut's
being,
not enough.
Being diabetic, I can only have a couple of them a day. So, yeah, I've tried them.
I'm glad you're limiting yourself. What else?
Yeah.
That sounds like a light
diabetes
lunch.
Is my goal disease. I'm trying to settle in nicely.
Dude, let me tell you.
I've
kind
of back into
awesome.
It like a warm bath.
Let me tell you, it's great. I'll tell you, when people see you taking out a needle in a restaurant to stick into your stomach, they love that. They love it. Yeah. And girls love diabetes, let me tell you.
PJ's the... Yeah, they dig the diabetes. I have that T-shirt.
Oh, they love it.
Chicks dig diabetes.
Well, I walk around with a big gold chain with a big D. I just call myself the big D. See,
PJ,
I don't call it sword. Diabetes. I call it livabetes, okay?
PJ decided to go the ridiculously unchecked high blood pressure route. So that was
That's just as fun. That's just
yeah.
as fun.
That
yeah,
was absolutely.
Took, when I finally had a doctor take my high blood pressure, his only comment was, "And you never had a headache?"
Yeah.
I was like, "No.
Okay, well,
why? Is it that high? Because if you were a woman, you'd be dead."
My best doctor comment was, my foot is like really messed up. I got a really weird foot. As a matter of fact, I was at Terry's once. I slept over and I had my socks off, and this is all he said. He looked at my foot and he said, "Has a doctor seen this?" So when I got back here and had a doctor see it, he asked if he could take a picture of it with his iPhone to show his medical class.
Oh my God.
Nurse,
yeah.
Get my sketch pad.
Yeah, he's like, whoa, hold on, wait a minute here. Let me look at this thing. You and I should get together someday and die together.
Oh,
I mean,
oh, certainly.
That would be great.
You guys are cut from very, very similar large amounts of cloth.
Like so much cloth that they have like an entire room of young foreign kids like cutting cloth for us.
You know what?
The foreign kids will be like, "We can't do this anymore."
Are we getting back to my small Asian boy again?
That's right. We're getting back to the small Asian boy.
Yeah, which I love that you walk around the small Asian boy. That's amazing, by the way. Can I tell you, though, we'd go out like Thelma and Louise driving in the car, but instead of holding hands, we'd be heading towards the cliff holding, like, cheeseburgers.
Right.
Oh, sure.
I think, by the way, Peach, Finney is probably gay-framed as well.
You got a gay frame?
What's that?
I have a gay frame, yeah.
PJ is what we have referred to, not in a derogatory fashion, by any means, as gay-framed.
I have the skeletal structure and the gait of a Park Slope gay man.
He really does.
And the subject came up because Steve and I were walking together in a park with my daughter. And I pointed out to him that, you know, people probably think that we're a couple here with our cute little daughter. And
because
he said, "Why?" I said, "Because I'm gay-framed."
You are gay-framed, yeah.
See, I came to the realization that I'm not only am I gay-framed, but I'm just gay.
Right. That's right.
So,
you went
the
way.
I'm coming out on this podcast, actually. So,
wow.
So, to my seven friends that are listening, yeah, you were right. You were right for the past 10 years.
Well, maybe that explains the cheese sandwich and everything. Maybe I'm trying to eat away the gay when I'm on the air.
Well, it depends. If you're eating a cheese sandwich, you're only gay if it's like brie.
Depends on the
cheese. Are you eating a brie cheese sandwich or just like,
I have
you
had
know,
a baguette with brie and butter. You are gay.
You are so gay. When I eat a cheese sandwich, it's just like Kraft Singles and Wonder Bread, so I'm not gay.
Right.
You know.
Cal is sitting back here taking all this in and wondering.
No, well, listen, what I've taken out of this is that I need to start making films if I want hookers.
That's A.
So I'm just going to walk around with a camcorder. And B, diabetes is cool. So that's what I've gotten out of this.
All the kids are doing it.
The more you know.
All the kids are doing it.
Ready to upload.
Yeah.
Well, Finn, go ahead.
We're going. We're done. It's over.
We're going to wrap it now. But
all right.
Play the music.
All right. What do you... Starting first base for the Boston Red Sox. That's the song they would play when Morrissey came running out. Starting at first base for the Boston Red Sox. Morrissey! The crowd, no clapping, just confusion.
Because he walks very slowly to the mound.
He just saunters out with his shoulders.
He just saunters out to first base. He's got flowers in his back pocket. Yes.
We may be. We may lose this game.
The umps are pissed. What?
We may lose this game, but damn it, we are the coolest team in baseball. I mean, we got more.
But he's passionate about it. He's passionate. Just a montage. I have a friend, by the way. He's making me a Photoshop picture of Morrissey in a Red Sox uniform.
Oh, that's tremendous. That's tremendous.
So when I get that, I'll give it to you guys.
You gotta send that over to me. We'll put it up on the screen.
I will. I will.
Man,
absolutely.
Thank you for coming on, man. And please.
Thanks for having me, dude.
When the movie is done and stuff like that, please come on again. We'll tell everybody where we can where they can go to see it or where it.
Cool.
Whatever we can do to get this movie out, Finn, we're gonna do. And
thank you so much, dude. I appreciate that. And thank you for having me. And I love talking to you guys. And I love talking about sports and the movie and reconnecting with you, Steve, because it's been too long. And I'm glad we're chatting again. But let's not do it for a long time, though.
No, yeah, let's take another 6 or 7 years off. This will be nice.
Next time you have a really nothing question about, like, a friend of yours, just wait another 6 years. Don't bother asking me whatsoever.
Congratulations, brother. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Steve. Hey, guys, have a good one.
All right.
Thanks, Finn. Good luck with the film.
All right, so there we go. This is is this After the Night is Through again? Yeah.
It is After the Night is Through. The other one was What a Difference a Drug Makes.
What a Difference a Drug Makes. Pretty cool. This is the Tom Waits one. Right?
Oh, it is.
Yeah, Leonard Cohen one. Right?
Yeah.
Well, that was fun, guys. Cal, I'm sorry that you weren't able to partake in as much of that.
No, it was great.
But reliving some stuff for me in the Los Angeles years. And Finn is a really good guy. I tell you what, guys, without getting sort of maudlin it's really nice to see somebody who's talented and who's a friend of yours get to do something that they want to do and being successful and stuff. So all the kudos in the world to Finn. He is a talented cat and I really hope the movie does something for him. And that was one of the coolest movie watching experiences I've ever had was watching.
That's gotta be awesome.
Yeah. And having, two friends in it, and being successful. So anyway, and Peach, I am going to put you in touch with him because he probably does need a score for the movie, and you'd be great at it. You'd be great to do that.
I've never had my career plugged on a live show before.
Have you done a lot of live shows?
I do a lot of live TV, but I'm always in the background. You really can't see.
Right. There was those 4 years you were on the Muppet Show.
Right.
Yeah.
You're frequently standing behind Matt Lauer.
That's correct. So, Cal, you want to take it back to sports? You want to go to a fun load? We have a lot of directions we can go in.
I'm curious to see what the fun load is about.
Does PJ have a fun load for us? We'd really
the
like
fun
to get
load,
to fun load
the
in
fun
regular
load
time.
Would the fun load is merely, at this point, I think you guys just have to start making fun of my life. Because it's I'm falling apart. It's falling apart over here. We're coming apart at the seams.
This is the direction you think the fun load should take.
I think it might be good if you could point out to me that it's all ending, and then maybe riff on that
on a very special Moesha.
Oh,
it sounds a little depressing.
Yeah, well, cue the Morrissey. I mean. I had no idea that Morrissey was going to overtake me. All right, the song.
You said that you didn't mean it?
I didn't mean it. That was a rhetorical cue to Morrissey.
Oh, I see. No, we were back at the oral surgeon again today.
Ugh, no more. No more.
And
this
see,
is like
so
a trilogy.
It won't stop. It won't stop over here.
Can we, you know what, next week, PJ, we need to put the fun back in fun load.
Yeah.
Okay?
We got to take the tragedy out of it.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk about the Giants then.
Thank God.
Cal, the NFL season starts on Wednesday.
Yeah, less than a week away.
Yeah, the Giants. And next week we're going to do a big NFL sort of preview show because all the other games are on Sunday and Monday. And, of course, the Jets. And maybe we'll talk to Joe Caparoso from Turn on the Jets. But the Giants open on Wednesday against the Dallas Cowboys in MetLife Stadium. Football is back. And I got two questions for you, okay, when it pertains to the Giants. Number one, are you buying the no respect card still? They're 20-1 to win the Super Bowl. The Eagles are 10-1.
Yeah, I think the over under on the wins was 9 for
right.
The Giants.
Eagles is 10.
Yeah, it's a little odd. I don't want to call it lack of respect, but it is a little odd that they're not being thought. I mean, their schedule is not that hard. It's a first place schedule, but it's not any harder than last year's schedule.
Right. They have two,
which was the hardest schedule in the history of football.
Right. They have two rough, really rough stretches. Like they have 2-3 game stretches that are sort of rough. But you're right. It's not terrible.
It's not any harder than last. It's a first place schedule. It's fair, but it's not any harder than last year's.
I agree.
I don't, like I said, I don't think people are taking them lightly.
Okay.
But it is odd to not hear them spoken of with the elite teams in the league, with the Packers and with the Patriots, and you hear the Eagles a lot. And the Giants are kind of like, oh, and then there's the Super Bowl champion Giants, which is kind of weird to me because they are an excellent team, and, you know, they bring back pretty much everybody from last year except for Brandon Jacobs.
Right.
And Manningham.
They're banged up a little bit on the defense and the offense. You know, they have their injuries and whatnot. They're definitely banged up at corner with Terrell Thomas. Now Prince Mukamura is out as well. But they bring back mostly, you know, Umanura's got the knee and Tuck has got this and JPP's got back spasms and stuff like that. They bring back largely the same defense, though, and they can still rush the passer with 4 guys. I mean, Canty's out, but go ahead.
No, and they have Eli Manning.
And they have Eli Manning.
And Eli, I mean, now, last year he put it all to rest. Eli Manning is one of the top quarterbacks in the league, and he's a guy that you would want leading your team.
2 Super Bowl rings. He threw for 4,900 yards last year.
Right. There's that, too.
And they were only 9-7. I mean, they could have easily been 10-6 or 11-5 or whatever. They had a couple of lucky wins in there too against the Cardinals and stuff like that. But
they struggled in the regular season for the most
struggled,
part.
They did. They had losses to the Redskins, which are terrible losses and stuff like that. Do you think? Here's my thing. I don't see any reason why they can't be a 10-11 win team. And do you love the Eagles?
No.
I don't either.
I mean,
trust the Eagles as far as I can throw.
It's the Eagles from last year. What did they do?
Right.
Right? What, I mean, they didn't really make any huge, you know, they didn't improve the team significantly.
Right.
And now Vic is hurt.
Right, which is going to be all year. I mean, he's going to be like banged up all year. I think the Eagles defense will be better, but they had those crushing losses last year.
Right.
Early on. Then they were probably the second hottest team in football towards the end, and everybody should have been really happy they didn't make the playoffs. But here's the thing with the Giants to me. They added Wilson. They added who looks like he could be an explosive playmaker out of the backfield, a third down back. They added Reuben Randall, who looks like he can fit into Mario Manningham's position quite neatly, like Roy Hobbs and Bump Bailey. The receiver core, if Hakeem Nicks is healthy and he played yesterday, there's no reason he shouldn't play in the opener. With Nicks, Cruz, and Reuben Randall, they have all the weapons there. They have one of the best receiving trios because I think Randall's a player.
He looks to be.
Everything on offense looks just fine. You're a little worried about the injuries along the offensive line, but there's no reason that they can't be a great team again. Like I just don't know when they get the respect They're completely under the radar. Under the radar.
But do you think it's a conscious lack of respect that teams don't respect the Giants, or they just kind of don't think about them?
Well, the Packers smacked them around, right? You know, Clay Matthews said that they were lucky, and you know, Sherman took a shot at them and said they were lucky, and everybody seems the Patriots. Please, you can't even talk to them because you know their whole thing is if Gronkowski was healthy, there's no way they lose that game.
Well.
There's a great lack of respect for the 9-17 that won the Super Bowl last year. I think. I don't think it's manufactured. I am starting to think it's genuine. I did think it was manufactured at first.
Right.
I thought it was like a giant rallying cry that they were going to use to sort of, you know, as motivation. I don't think it is anymore. I think it's genuine.
Well, they are certainly using it to their advantage.
As well they should.
You know, they're playing up the no respect angle to give them a little bit of motivation. Not that you would need motivation, but
right.
They're a good team, Steve. They're arguably the best team in the NFC.
I think.
I
mean, it's them and the Packers to me. Those are and the 49ers. I mean, maybe those are the three teams. 49ers. Yeah, I think they're better than the 49ers.
They're better than the 49ers. The 49ers are going to be good, but.
But they still have Alex Smith quarterback.
Again, look at the 49ers have a little bit better defense than the Giants, I think, overall. But when you look at Eli Manning versus Alex Smith, it outweighs any advantage they have on defense.
Oh, it's exponentially better. Right. Offense is exponentially better. And if you get a healthy Ahmad Bradshaw with Wilson mixed in for a season... I think they're going to have a much better running game than they had last year, which is good. You want to keep Eli Manning from having to drop back 35, 40 times a game.
Right.
If you can have five games in there, Cal, where he only has to throw the ball 25 times, and you can win the game that way, you're much better off. Much better off. Now, so give me your feelings on this game on Wednesday night. First of all, opening on Wednesday night. Second of all, opening with replacement referees.
The replacement referees are no big deal to me.
Oh, I got a huge problem with that, Cal.
Why?
Because because they're not even the best replacement referees.
Right.
It's a gazillion-dollar industry. Can you just put the referees that – can you just enough?
You want to put the guys out there that are normally out there so we can rip their performance. Rather than rip the performance of replacement referees.
At least the guys out there who we're going to rip, know the rules. I mean, know the NFL rules, Bri. There's different rules in college. How can you be a billion, gazillion-dollar industry? Do I think it's going to be a huge deal? No, but it's frustrating to me. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's just frustrating to me that a gazillion-dollar industry can't find a way to have the best officials on the field.
Well, that's a whole different... angle. If you're frustrated by it because of that, I get that. I can understand that. But on the field, I'd be very surprised if a replacement referee, changed the course of a game.
Really?
Yeah. I would be surprised.
Have you watched these preseason games?
I have.
I mean, awful. Awful. They ruled a guy down because he fell down without being touched. It's a college rule. And they whistled the play dead.
I feel like the last couple of years, though, officiating in all sports has been dreadful.
That's fair.
You know, so that's why, and maybe that's where I'm coming from. I don't think it can be that much worse that it's going to affect a game. It might affect plays within the game, and you will probably notice more calls missed than you normally would. But at the end result, at the end of the game, I don't think you can. You know, one team is going to say, "Well, if we had regular referees, we would have won that game."
Right.
That's my opinion.
No, that's fair.
But I get your frustration because, you know, what the heck? You are a multi-billion-dollar corporation. Do what you got to do to get a key element to your product the right way.
Yep. I think my frustration is probably twofold. I think you're right. I think that's more to the point that,
maybe,
you know, fix it.
And maybe the NFL is thinking the way that I'm thinking, where it's not that big a deal. And they don't sense the urgency of getting it right or getting it fixed before the first game of the season.
Right.
Maybe that's how they're looking at it.
And if it goes that way the first week of the season, the weekend of the season, and they see some egregiously missed calls.
Well, that will certainly expedite the process.
You know Ed Hockley is going to be at home like, oh, blow that call, baby.
Mm-hmm.
Every blown call is more leverage for the guns. 2 tickets to the gun show.
They should have a camera on Ed Hockley.
Hockey cam.
Hockey cam.
Hockley cam. Camahawk.
He's sitting in a lazy boy at home, right? The camera's just on him. And they show a play. They show just a really bad call. And then the producer's saying, cut to hockey cam. And then they cut to him, and he's sitting there with a big grin on his face, smoking a cigar.
Right. In a tank top with the guns hanging out.
Right.
The guns in Navarone. Go to hockey cam. Let's see what he thinks of that call. He's just sitting there like George Peppard.
I would love to hear, you know, when I guess it's Fox that has Mike Pereira on the game.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to hear his take when they go to him, because they'll go to him with key calls or the call is under review.
That's going
to
be interesting.
Right?
Right.
Let's hear what he has to say about the, you know, he's got no affiliation with these replacement refs.
Right.
You know,
that's going to be interesting. Yep. I mean, he can rip them a new. I mean, he has still like a tendency to lean on the side of the referees for sure, because he was the director of referees, and so he's got nothing for these guys.
No, I mean many of the real referees work for him.
That's right.
These guys
be interesting.
Nothing.
He becomes must-see TV.
Could be.
Give me your gut feeling on this Giant Dallas game that kicks off the season.
I think the Giants are going to win. I don't think it's going to be terribly close in the end. You know, like I could see it being like a 10-point win or a 13-point win. I just think the Giants are that much better than the Cowboys. And the theme of the year is probably going to be this no respect thing.
Yes.
You know, they're gonna come out blazing in the first game.
That's our first Calstradamus of the NFL season.
Of the NFL season, yeah.
Well, feels good.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how that turns out.
Are you watching Dez Bryant? Is it your turn to watch Dez Bryant?
No. I have him on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Nice.
What a sin. I don't know who has him on Wednesdays.
No, nobody does, and that's a problem.
He saw the schedule, and he was like, nice. Wednesday.
Oh, boy.
Is he worth it? I mean, is Dez Bryant worth this?
He's got to be. Bryant is a lot.
No, well, I'm asking you.
A lot of money tied up in him.
I know, but gosh.
We're referring to the fact that the Dallas Cowboys have assigned a chaperone. Is it a full-time chaperone?
Yeah, they do.
And the Dez rules?
No, they call it something else.
Not the Book of Dez. What was it?
I gotta look, because they do have an. Of course, they have a name for it. A name for everything. But
I thought it was something biblical or something like that.
I think it was.
I've been coughing a great deal. It's really good for radio.
Well, are you okay?
I'm fine.
I just want to know.
Do you know it's been 2+ years since I've had a cigarette?
Wow.
August 20th. It was 2 years.
That's terrific.
Not a one, Bri.
That is, you know, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's a big thing.
You don't have one, do you? Because
no, I don't.
Great.
Sorry.
I think if the Giants stay healthy, just my take, I think if they stay healthy and if Eli Manning and JPP are upright for the season, then you got a chance. Because I am through betting against Eli Manning. I think we all are.
I don't think he can anymore.
Yeah, I think we all learned our lesson.
Yeah.
I think we're all good.
So what do you think? How do you think the Giants are going to make the playoffs this year?
I do.
Okay.
I do. I had a good conversation with McWalters, our resident Giant fan.
Right.
The biggest Giant fan I know. and probably that you know as well.
Yeah, I would say.
Well, he's a junkie. He's got a problem.
Is he insulted? Does he feel the lack of respect too?
Yes.
He does, right?
Yeah, and if he doesn't, he's going to manufacture it. Yes. Yes. But we had a really good conversation about the season. We went through the schedule, did wins and losses.
Okay.
I came out at, what did I came out at 12-4.
It's the Dez Commandments, by the way.
The Dez Commandments, that's it. Very, very good. I came out at 12-4. He came out at 11-5, but he really wanted 12-4.
Okay.
He just didn't want to be greedy.
Well, now, did you come out at 12-4 seriously, or was
yes.
that the old
reverse jinx?
Reverse, yeah.
No.
Okay.
No, I was again. We've had very, very good conversations, Kevin and I. No hating. I took a look at their schedule, and if they stay healthy, I don't see any reason they can't go 12-4.
All right.
And that wins the division, and you're talking about like a 2-seed.
And they've proven that they don't need to have home field advantage in the playoffs. They can go anywhere and win.
No, absolutely.
Doesn't matter.
Absolutely. I really do feel that. I wasn't trying to reverse jinx them or anything like that. I took a realistic look at it. I had some surprising games that Kev thought for sure that I would mark as a loss that I marked as a win and vice versa. But taking into account, you know, letdown games, travel, who might be a particular quarterback for a team by that point, or, you know, what that team was. I even looked at, like, the other team's schedule, too, to see who they were playing the week before. And I came up with 12-4. I think they're a very, very good football team. I think if they have a weakness, it's probably that they can't run the ball when they need to. Or if they need to, if you get a big lead, you can probably come back on them because their secondary might be a touch suspect. Even though they can come with four, I think their secondary can be a touch suspect. And if you can pass protect against them, you can throw the ball on. So I think the teams with really good offensive lines will do well against them. But they're battle-tested, they're well-coached, and, you know, Eli Manning is a top-five quarterback, period.
Well, that's the thing. I think that their defense is going to keep every game close, or most every game close. And if their defense can keep the game close, you always have. Well, I'm not looking at the schedule, but I would say at least 12 games, you have the quarterback advantage in that game, and you have the advantage if it's a close game and Eli Manning gets the ball last. You're feeling pretty good.
Yeah. That's spot on. That's it.
You know, they play Green Bay, so you'd say Aaron Rodgers is better than him. But really, is there any other quarterback that they – who do they play? You know, they're not –
I mean, they play the Eagles twice. That's maybe Michael Vick. They play the Cowboys twice. That's Romo.
Right.
They play the Redskins twice. That's RG3.
Right.
He's better than all three of those guys.
And that's better. Six games right there. You know, they play the 49ers.
He's better than Alex Smith. That's seven.
They play the Packers.
All right, that's 7-1.
I don't know who they play in the AFC.
Let's punch it up.
Yeah, I'm going to do it right now. But, I mean, all right, so in half of the games, right?
Yeah.
He's already better than the quarterback in half the games.
Yeah. This is, by the way, what we're doing, I love. This is like a new thing that – just a couple weeks ago. And it really came out because of the Jets.
What? What are we doing?
Somebody posted, I think it was on Turn on the Jets the other day, where everybody talking about how the Jets are going to be a 6-win team and they're
right.
terrible and blah, 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 blah. And then they listed the quarterbacks that the Jet defense gets to go against this season. And 10 of those games are against either rookie quarterbacks or Ryan Fitzgerald. I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Right.
In two of those games. So you could say in 10 of those games, the defense has an advantage. And the other six, the only two that are really egregious.
Brady.
Are Brady, who Rex has beaten 3 times.
Right.
Phillip Rivers, who Rex has beaten 3 times, including once in the playoffs. And that's like, that's, I'm trying to think of who else. Oh, shoot. Well, here's the Giants schedule, okay? Tampa Bay Bucks, 8-1, okay? So they're 8-1 in the quarterback matchup.
Right.
Carolina Panthers.
He's better than Cam Newton.
Sure is, 9-1. Cleveland Browns.
He's better than Brandon Weeden.
10-1. Pittsburgh Steelers. That's a push.
It's a push, but, it had, you know, Roethlisberger's always been the guy that you would measure Eli up against.
I think you got to flip that now.
I think at worst it's a push.
Right.
But
it might be a flip.
It might be a flip now.
So well, let's give it a push. 10-1-1.
All right.
Bengals.
Andy Dalton.
Better than Andy Dalton. Saints. Breeze. Okay, Breeze is better.
Right.
He's 11-2-1. Falcons. He's better than Matt Ryan. You know my feelings on Matt Ryan.
Well, you are not. You might not be the one to answer that then, because you think everybody's better than Matt Ryan.
Not everybody. Tim Tebow's not better than Matt Ryan.
Well, I know your feelings on Tim Tebow, so you can't say that either.
That's true. We're having a real problem here. This is a real biscuit. You know who's not better than him? PJ.
Is not better than Matt Ryan?
No, he is a little bit. He's a little bit better. That's how bad Eli definitely is. So that's, what are we at, 14-1-1? Or 13-1-1. And then the Ravens.
Flacco.
And Flacco. He's better than Flacco. All
right, so 13 out of the 16 games, the Giants have a quarterback advantage.
Yep, of some type.
Keep the game close in those 13 games, and you've got a chance to win them all.
There's your 12 wins. There's your 12-4.
Yeah, I can see it.
How do you like that?
I don't see 9. I don't see more than 7 losses here. I mean,
I don't.
I don't see 7 losses.
If they all stay healthy, which is a huge if, obviously it's the NFL. Where's your 9 losses? Where's your 8 losses?
They've got a top 5 quarterback. They've got a top 5 coach. They've got a top 5 defense.
They're very handsome.
And they got no respect, so they got an edge.
Now, here's they're like Jeter, is what you're saying.
You know he's got an edge.
You know he's got an edge. PJ, we're about to go into overtime here. Do you have a fun load? Because if not, we're going to do the Jets thing, and then we're probably going to wrap.
Are you being a jerk now?
No, you have surprised us in the past with the fun. I put 2 small pieces in there.
I love you.
I didn't go heavy on the guard. So wolf up, whatever it is you got to do. Wolf out. Wolf it. Here's the Jets, Cal. You ready?
Straight to the monkey. Let's go.
No research, nothing. Straight to the monkey. Oh, that's so good.
He did it so well, Jeff Ben.
What was the cheese with the sandwich, by the way?
3 cheeses. I have jalapeno cheddar, Lacy Swiss, and provolone. I had small slices of each, and I melted them over a piece of bread.
I'm starving.
Not even American. Wow.
Ooh, no, I don't do American.
Not even deli American?
Rarely.
Boar's Head American? You don't do Boar's Head? Really?
On a cheeseburger? That's about it.
Wow. Otherwise, white American or yellow American?
Generally
American.
White.
David Bowie. Young Americans. All right.
Where do you stand on the Munster cheese?
Love Munster.
Right?
Do you too, Cal?
Love it.
I'm
not. Yeah, my kids, they only eat Munster. Monster cheese, they call it.
We're going to go into overtime, folks, so please tune into the podcast. And clearly, we have our fun load for the evening, and clearly, it's about cheese. So stay with us for the fun load. We're going to go to overtime in a second. One last thing, guys, before we go into overtime, remember to check out Blue Haven, New York. If you're in the New York City area and you want to go to a really good sports bar, Blue Haven NYC. That's bluehavennyc.com. And check it out. They have all kinds of cool specials. Go see Megan and Dermot and Rory over there. And Cal and I are going to be doing remotes from there, by the way. It's going to be very, very cool. And PJ is invited as well. and he's going to eat a lot. So am I. So is Cal. We're going to eat a lot of wings.
They must have cheese there, right?
They have a lot of cheese. Speaking of cheese, I am again the monster.
Really?
I'm not a fan.
Really? You don't? Is it too sour?
Can we just put out a general how much I love cheese, by the way? Love cheese.
Who doesn't?
No, I'm saying if you gave me five foods, I can only have five foods. Cheese has got to be in there. It's got to be. And by the way, everybody on the live show, we will see you next week. Check out the podcast on iTunes.com. And thank you to Mark Finney again. We're in overtime. Well done. Boy, you are.
Wow.
You're a pro. Five foods, I'm taking cheese. Who's with me? Am I right?
I'm with you.
Five foods, and you're taking cheese.
Cheese is one of the foodstuffs I must have.
Now, see,
I haven't met
a
cheese I never liked or didn't like. Never met a cheese I didn't like. I screwed that up. I like cheese.
It's got to be the right kind of cheese for me.
I want the ability to bring whatever cheeses I like. So I'm using cheese in the general.
All right, then I'm in.
Then there's different, you know, levels of, are we cutting the cheese and eating?
Hey. Where
eight-year-old humor called, it's that.
Low brow.
Yep. No, are you putting it on a, you know, a cheese plate? You're putting it out nice? Am I having a meat with it? A spiced meat?
Grill it up.
Am I making a grilled cheese? What are we doing?
Well, what are you doing? You tell me.
If we're just...
Because I don't know what you're doing.
Let's go deli cheeses. Because you got us rolling on that. With the American...
Yeah, right.
Okay, so American PJ only on a cheeseburger. Cal, I do American languages.
Yeah, Cal. I don't... I would if it's all we had. But I would prefer not. I go Munster first.
Okay. You don't do a nice, like, American and ham on, like, a hero, lettuce, tomato, mayo? Oh, news.
See, I would prefer Munster. I would do American, of course.
Okay.
Monterey Jack.
We're into the sandwich cheeses here, clearly.
Right.
Little Colby.
Sure.
Colby, I like sliced, though, now. Now you're talking about, give me a block of Colby, and we're in like Flynn.
Provolone.
Oh, please.
But where to begin?
Please. I would knock down my grandma to get at the provolone. I like provolone so sharp that the second it enters my mouth, the roof of my mouth begins to itch.
Has to itch.
Yeah.
Has to. Where do we stand on the stinky cheeses, the Italian stinky cheeses?
If there's wine, I'll do stinky cheese.
Like, I'm talking about the cheese in, like, the...
In an antipasto.
Yeah, in an antipasto, yeah.
Fontina?
I don't even know what the stinky cheese is called in our antipasto, but I got to have a piece of salami nice with it, otherwise...
You can't eat it.
Yeah, that's not a straight eat.
All right, let's just cut to the chase here. We're dancing around it. I'm going right there, straight to the monkey, mozzarella.
Yeah, I mean, fresh mozzarella?
In every form.
Well, that's what I mean.
Fresh
mozzarella.
Smoked. String. I'll take it any way I can get it.
There was a period of time Uncle Tommy, Scott, and I got into. We decided that for something that was really awesome, we were going to call it "This is smoked mozzarella," because that's how good smoked mozzarella is.
Yeah.
So like we would say like, "Oh man, I had a sandwich the other day. Was it smoked mozzarella? I mean, was it as good as smoked mozzarella?" That became a qualifier for us.
Right. To the highest standards means smoked mozzarella.
You want to, if I could only take five foods, I would forget cheese. I would take mozzarella.
You would go.
That would be one of the five
food
items that I bring.
Wow. Where do we say that's? I have no problem with that. But are we talking fresh mutts, like where it's still hot, nice, still warm in the water?
Don't matter.
I will sit there and I will eat a whole lump of that crap. I will sit there and just. Do you ever make the P? Do you ever make it, Cal? You ever make it?
I never made.
No, I'm not. I'm not hands on with that now.
Uncle Tommy took a class and they made fresh mozzarella.
Did he?
He said it was like the greatest night of his life. It's like unbelievable. Like
what
I
do you
made
start
that.
With? Like angel flesh? I mean, what do you start with?
The tears of a unicorn.
Right.
A little salt.
That's the water in the mozzarella. The tears from an Italian unicorn. Actually, it's the tears from the horn around the neck and the necklace that you're wearing. Let me just say, I would definitely put mutz in my top five cheeses. How's that?
All right.
Do we have time for a top? Let's do top three cheeses. We don't have time for top five. Your top three. Cal, we already have the number one, clearly.
Well, you've got two also.
What's two? Oh, Munster.
Right.
Wow. PJ, do you have a, can you give us a one and a two?
You know, when you said top three, my heart started to beat really fast. Like, I got very nervous.
It's like choosing between your kids.
Before I come up with this list.
Look, we can always go back and fix it in post, okay? Nobody's going to make you only eat these three cheeses for the rest of your life. It's just a podcast.
I kind of feel like I'm going to be held to this now if I say it out loud.
That's true. We are in extra time, though, so this is not live.
Afterwards, right. PJ, you'll be asked to name the favorite member of your family.
Right. It's kind of analogous at this point. Provolone.
Everybody's up against the wall. Who are you saving?
Yeah, I'm saving the provolone.
Right. Whoever's got the cheese, yeah.
Extra sharp, please. It's got to be sharp. If it's mild, then I don't know what that is.
Okay.
That's just a slice of white something. It's got to be sharp. Definitely some mutz.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of mutz. And then number three, I'm going to go soft. I'm going to go ricotta.
Oh, nicely done.
I can't go a week without that.
And you said it like Giada. Nicely done.
Thank you. You should see my cleavage right now.
Upsetting. You banged out your three. Cal has one spot left. I'm going to go here and throw two on immediately. One is Monterey Jack. I love Monterey Jack. Every sandwich.
Yeah.
I love it. I can cut it up and eat it. I love it. Crackers.
The kind
anything.
Of cheese you could put on a salad and get away with it.
Yeah,
throw some
Monterey
Jack on that salad.
Salad all the time. All the time. Number two, a cheese we have not talked about, guys, but Madone. I am a junkie for the Pecorino Romano.
Oh, yeah.
Or the Locatelli. Either one. Either Locatelli or Pecorino Romano. Sprinkle cheese.
Call it.
Grated cheese.
Parmesan.
You dig through the grated cheese to find a little chunk in there, and then you take it out and you eat it.
Yeah, it's different, yeah.
That's the Pecorino Romano. I gotta have it, and I am on top of Old Smoky. Like when I eat spaghetti, meatballs, whatever, any sort of pasta that has sauce or gravy, or whatever. I mean, forget it. It became a thing at the table. It's a thing at my table, where my father would be like, "Seriously, you gotta stop. That's enough."
Yeah, enough. Get $8.
I can live without it. I will not make. I won't make pasta if I don't have it in the house.
Exactly. It's not worth it.
So that's I got to put that at number one. I mean, that's how I feel about the Pecorino Romano.
My daughter can't eat a bowl of macaroni without being her place setting covered in the cheese because she takes, you know, she's got a little hand, but she takes dips her whole hand in and just like dumps it on the plate all over the table. I got to get the broom afterwards.
I love just taking a little piece and then you know, like when you get the hard. The harder pieces that are still in there in the Pecorino Romano, like the fresh grated nice.
Yeah, yeah.
And you just say, I got to taste it, quality control. It's always quality control. I got to dig in there and make sure this is good. This passes the muster.
We can go on now.
We can continue.
Can I tell you about a life-altering cheese I had?
Ooh.
And it was in the preparation. I had flaming feta. Have you had flaming feta?
Wow. No, but feta would definitely merit consideration in my top three.
Oh, well, they take a block of feta, about 6 inches, like a nice little brick, and they pour the ouzo on it, and they light it up. And then they bring it to your table on fire.
You had me at flaming.
Yeah.
Whoa. Ooh.
I need to get involved in that.
You need to go find a Greek place that will do that for you because
it's
unbelievable.
I'm in Bayside, New York. I got a shot.
Yeah. And feta is not a melting cheese. Like, feta won't melt on you. It'll just sit there and be like, bring it. You can't melt feta unless you have a blowtorch.
I think it just sits there on fire. Like, what do you got?
Well, that's just it. You could light it. You could leave it on fire for like 2 minutes. It's so great.
Has anybody seen any Dolmadakia that I could sit on? Who's got me?
It's not like Terry's Jubilee. You got to blow it out.
Right. I am now picturing feta with like sort of like a hairy chest and a couple of chains and like, what do you got?
Light me up.
Oopa, I'm on fire. I love it. Cal, I need your third cheese.
Swiss.
Ooh, an aristocrat. All right, very good.
Baby Swiss.
Is that from your royal lineage?
Yeah, that's from the Canadians.
What's a Canadian cheese? They have cheese up there?
They do.
Beaver cheese.
Yeah.
What is a Canadian cheese?
Gruyere, I think they like.
Oh, Gruyere.
Ooh.
Very nice. Very good on a burger.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Our buddies, my buddy Colin, who has his place Dumont in Brooklyn, great place if you're in Williamsburg and you want to get one of the best burgers or mac and cheese in the city, go to Dumont. It's in Williamsburg. They put Gruyere. That was one of the first times I ever had Gruyere.
Right.
Is on their burger and in their mac and cheese. That's one of the cheeses they use in the mac and cheese. Melts very well.
It sure does.
God, I love cheese. I am starving. Are we done? Can we move on? I'm just going to go. Can we move on? I'm done.
You can
I'm
be done.
I'm so hungry.
Make
I'm so
yourself
hungry
a nice
right
cheese
now.
Sandwich.
I'm going to go have a nice grilled cheese nice.
Mm-hmm.
Final question. Oh, did I give my third?
No.
Let me give my third. I'm putting feta in there.
Okay.
I am. I love feta cheese. Love it. Crumbled nice on a salad. Oh, so good. No. I take it back. Wow, terrible job by me. Smoked Gouda.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Like the hickory terrific. Smoked Gouda. Oh, man. I sit there and eat the whole wheel of cheese like Baxter. I just sit there.
Can either one of you eat goat cheese?
Love it.
Sure.
Salad, wow. though. It's a salad. That's a salad-only extravaganza for me.
See, I can't eat goat cheese.
No? What, is it political or?
Yeah.
Religious?
It's yeah.
I don't like what goat cheese stands for.
You do goat cheese straight, or you could do goat cheese with the herbs du Provence.
I like the goat cheese with the herbs du Provence.
See, I avoid that. I like it straight.
Why can't you eat the goat cheese there, Cal? What happened?
I just don't like it. A little too tangy for me.
Okay, that's fair. How do we feel about the port wine cheese?
Oh, it's
that's
wonderful.
That's,
one.
That ain't what'd cheese.
What'd you say, Peach?
That ain't cheese.
Hey, look.
No, it is delicious on
spread.
Crackers.
Don't disparage Cracker Barrel. It is a spread. You're right. I apologize. That's like an Alouette. Alouette is like a cheese spread. Oh, it's good, though, man.
It's very tasty, but, you know, it's halfway to mayonnaise somehow.
I'm gonna give you a final cheese here, boys, and then we're going to wrap up. You ready?
Okay.
I love these with chicken and a biscuit on a chicken and a biscuit, which is my favorite all-time cracker.
Chicken and a biscuit.
Oh, they're so good for you, too, by the way. Oh, my gosh. There cannot be a worse cracker for you than chicken and a biscuit.
Well, the name of it just indicates that it's not good.
Right. It's a heart attack in every little box.
We took a cracker and soaked it in fat.
Then we dusted it with fat. Laughing Cow, boys.
Chicken fat. Laughing Cow.
Oh. Laughing Cow on smeared on a chicken and a biscuit. Oh, man. I hope Finn listens to the rest of this and somehow finds a way to put this in fat, too. because we really...
Just weave this conversation in.
Yeah, just weave this conversation in somehow. All right, that's it. Let's wrap it up, boys. 2 hours and 15 minutes is plenty.
Wow, look at the way he just slams the book shut.
That's right.
Kicking us out.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. DJ, final unload.
I just read that Paramount Pictures is getting into a tiff with the family of Mario Puzo over The Godfather and money and royalties and rights. And come on. Where'd the story come from, Paramount? Do the right thing. Don't be jerks.
I think if there's somebody you don't want to mess with...
It's a Puzo.
That's right. Cal, final unload.
I want to say goodbye to two tennis legends who retired this week. On the ladies' side, Kim Clijsters. On the men's side, Andy Roddick. Both retiring after the U.S. Open. Good luck to both of them in their future endeavor. And there's your tennis minute.
And my final unload is happy birthday to a friend of ours, a friend of the podcast, and an all-around magnificent little guy. Our buddy Dan, his birthday is today on Draftmas Eve, which means he gets two sets of gifts. Maybe tomorrow one of them is Drew Brees under his tree.
Drew Brees and a wheel of cheese.
And a wheel of cheese. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you all next week. Cal, PJ, I love you both. Have a good week, boys.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. Good night.